I'm John Glover. I was Lionel Luther on Smallville, and I will always, always hold on to Smallville. And I hope you all do too.
Welcome to Always Home to Smallville. In this podcast, we talk about each and every episode of The Young Superman Show that ran from 2001 to 2011 on the WB and the CW. I'm your host, Zach Moore, and I'm joined by From Lois and Clark, the new podcast of Superman. That's right, it's back, and he's back, Mr. Matt Truex. What's up, Matt?
How you doing there, schmutt guy?
I don't make them like I used to, see?
Get ready for a lot of that, folks.
Ooh. So, yes, we're talking about noir. What became a tradition late season Jimmy Olsen meaningless episode. Noir, sleeper. I mean, he was involved in the love triangle between Chloe Sullivan and Doomsday in season 8, so he had a little more to do with the A plot. Yes, right. We'll get there.
Is sleeper the one where he's like Bond?
Yes.
Okay, thank you.
Where he's
he's got like the watch thing. Yeah.
A cufflink that knocks somebody out. It was after
weird
because
his dad's
strike.
A secret agent. Because its dad's a secret agent on Lois and Clark. That's weird. Interesting. Mm.
And there is what? Oh, it's Target Jimmy Olsen is the name of an episode. I thought it was like Secret Agent Jimmy Olsen.
No,
that's a different one. Now it's interesting because it's like the highs are getting higher, but the lows are getting lower.
Yeah,
for
that's
season
a good way
six,
to put
and this is the season six I remember. As we get into it. But, you know, talking about Lois and Clark, obviously, you're the host of Lois and Clark podcast. There's an episode of Lois and Clark that is like this as well. And I watched it the other day for Action Comics Day.
Yes.
Everything has a day now. But I watched Lois and Clark's Fly Hard, a season one episode, and then followed by Smallville's Noir. And on Twitter, I was like, I watched these today. One of them is better than the other. And I don't know what you guys thought I thought, but... The Lois and Clark episode is far superior to this.
100%, yes. It's a better piece of television. It's a better use of the noir, like flashbacky, you know, black and white stuff. It's a better, I thought, better production values in the back flashback stuff.
Shocking.
Just like
you'll never hear me say that other than maybe that instance.
No.
But Lois and Clark had better production values than Smallville.
And you know, I'm like aesthetically obsessed with Lois and Clark, but But there's no comparison, generally. You know, like,
right.
Smallville, for the most part, looks like a movie, and Lois and Clark looks like a TV show.
You know, we're not going to talk all about that episode too much, but I did want to just mention the fact that, you know, in my mind, these are connected. Because it's like, oh, it's the black and white flashback to the 40s episode that each of these shows do, right? And, I had forgotten exactly what the mechanism, obviously we'll talk about it, right? But what the mechanism is in this episode, like, oh, are they flashing back and forth? No, they just,
no.
It's just half the episode is just in this fantasy land. And then we cut back to the main plot and I'm like, oh, that's a choice. But in Lois and Clark, it's balanced, you know, because I'm rewatching it. Actually, I think I texted you and I was watching. I was like, hey, I'm 15 minutes in. Where are the flashbacks?
Right.
This episode? But it's just a fun, like, use of all the characters together. Like, you tell me, Matt, is that like the only episode that all the characters are in the same room ever?
Yeah, again, it's called Fly Hard. They're doing a Die Hard thing. Everyone
that's right.
Is
we should please explain because we're for the uninitiated.
Season one of Lois and Clark, it's right before the two-part finale, basically. But like, everyone finds themselves at the Daily Planet on Saturday night when they shouldn't be there, and like Clark's just about to go out to see a movie, and Lois and Lex stop by on their way to a date to pick up something or whatever. And Chakotay comes in and holds them hostage.
Robert Beltran before Voyager.
Yes.
Crossing all the streams.
And then, you know, they're all being held in the one room and they're trying to get away. And Clark wants to go do Superman stuff, but he won't be able to do it in time for the people with the guns. And Lex gets shot. Like, it's great. But then the reason that the thieves are there is because of something that happened in the 40s. So we flash back to everybody doing their best version of a 1940s gangster. And by that, I mean, you know, Terry and Dean doing okay, and John Shea just wiping the floor with everyone.
As usual.
It's as if he was cast to do this role and just happened to be Lex Luthor later. Like, he's so good.
Oh, man, so true. John Shea is a MVP of that show.
Something I like about that episode that I think we should discuss here is one of the characters in the flashback that Dean Cain plays in the flashback ties into the current day plot. Whereas this is just like dreamland.
Well, that's
funkiness.
Central. Like, if you're going to do that, you need some kind of connective tissue other than, right. I like old movies.
Right.
Like, what? I'm going to solve the crime in my dreams. Like, what? Anyway, not to bury the lead or get ahead of ourselves, one of the two. But that was a great, obviously, Fly Hard taking off of the title Die Hard.
Which it's really clever, folks. Yeah.
Which was only a few years old when that episode came out.
Wow. Good point.
Right? And see, that's the thing about Lois and Clark. You can have all these fun episode titles. We get like film noir. You know, that's where that, for those who don't know, that's where that title for this episode comes from.
Slumber.
No one said it. It's shocking. Like you're watching film noir movies. It's the I didn't know you were one for film noir, Jimmy Olsen. It's James, actually. Is it? We'll talk about that. But yeah, like that's just like all flashback stuff aside, that episode works great even without that stuff. Like, it's high stakes, there's stuff going on, you know, lots of character interplay. People think Clark's a coward and he's just really trying to hide his identity. Anyway, it's a real great episode of Lois and Clark. I love season one, so any excuse to kind of go back and watch those is great. And all predicated on Perry White doing a spring cleaning, which is hilarious.
Yes, yes, that's why he and Jimmy are there. It's because cut out of Elvira.
Michael Landis is Jimmy. I haven't seen him in so long because I'm watching Lois and Clark, the podcast. I'm in season three with y'all now, and I'm like, oh, yeah, I remember Jimmy one. I remember why I like Cat Grant back then in season. Lex Luthor is here. So anyway.
Yeah, that's a series wrap on Cat Grant, too, in that episode. Never bizarre. To be seen again. Yeah,
And Jack, the kid.
He's in the two-part finale, believe it or not.
But he, Cat Grant, and Lex Luthor, who does come back multiple times, but like recurring to regular characters in season one, then just as if, you know, just never existing. You know, obviously Lex is a presence in the show, thankfully, moving forward. But those two, I mean, you know, talk about Lois and Clark being on Earth 93. It's like seasons 2 through 4 on like Earth 94, right? Where it's like slightly, you know, what happened to Cat Grant? Like, they didn't even say. It's
don't worry
so
about
odd. By the way, you know, I was recently on Lois and Clark. We talked about the Don't Tug on Superman's Cape. We had a great discussion. Jonathan Frakes, right, episode. The first officer from Star Trek The Next Generation. Then we
think of it as the Genie Francis episode, but okay.
Chakotay, Robert Belcher, the first officer from Star Trek Voyager. You guys, I don't know why you didn't get Leonard Nimoy, right? And just keep going down the list, right?
Oh my God.
All the first officers.
That would have been great. We did have Denise Crosby. I know she's not a first officer, but we, you know.
Denise.
Keeping members of the Enterprise employed.
Very, very well represented in the Star Trek crew over there. And,
yes.
And a piece of trivia I discovered, and we'll move on. We'll talk about Smallville here in a second now, but we're putting off talking this episode as long as we can.
I'm fine to put it off. That's fine, yeah.
So the kid who plays Jack, like the teenager, like the second Jimmy Olsen of Lois and Clark's.
Right. It's like street kid who finds out that Clark is Superman, basically.
He sort of, you know, they kind of apply. So many story possibilities with him moving forward, but he's forgotten. But he played the Chris Dimitril, I think his last name is. I looked it up the other day, and this blew my mind because you guys know how I'm all about these actors and shows connections. This kid played Commander Riker's son in one episode of Star Trek: The Next Generation. This alternate feature, it's called Future Imperfect. Riker gets knocked out with some gas on a planet. He wakes up. It's 15 years later. He's got a son. And this kid plays his son. I'm like, I always thought this kid looked familiar, and that's why I looked at him. I'm like, oh my God. I was on the Jonathan Frakes episode of Lois and Clark. I didn't say it, so I said it online. So now I feel like recovered now.
I appreciate that. Thank you.
Yeah. So, you know,
this is a companion piece really to Lois and Clark at this point.
It's
but
another crossover.
I appreciate it.
So yeah, if you're going through your Smallville season 6 rewatch and you watch this one and you're like, oh, that was disappointing, jump on over to Metropolis on Earth 93, check out Fly Hard. It's a fun episode of Lois and Clark. And take it from there. So,
yes.
But yeah, that's really, I mean, that's where my mind went. And that's why you're here, Matt. This was a very Lois and Clark-esque episode. in my opinion.
Yes, and that the plot doesn't matter and it makes no sense. Yes.
Yes. Thank you, Drew Carey. But it's like... but in Smallville, The Official Companion, Season 6 by Craig Byrne, available wherever books are sold. Some light was shed on where the idea for this episode came from. According to Allison Mack, quote, Aaron and I look like we're straight out of the 1950s in the Season 6 promotional photos. The way that we're dressed and how my hair's done, they really liked that look and style and decided to go with it for the show. So apparently, this entire plot was predicated on they did that, you know, that little photo shoot.
I know exactly what photos they're talking about. Yeah.
Yeah. Like Chloe's kind of almost pinup esque, and she's got like a typewriter and a fan, and Jimmy's looking real suave.
Doesn't Lois have a fan, and she's like sitting on a desk oddly?
Yeah.
And,
they're all hanging out in these some of the Daily Planet, some like industrial locations. And it's a weird mishmash of styles and stuff. Clark's got a real nice watch on, I remember.
Yes.
And it was just very odd. And but that's what inspired this very odd episode.
Wow.
So yeah, that's really the only insight I had. Now,
you're pulling from source material that rich, it really makes sense why we've got such a dense and wonderful episode. What?
Now, have you seen The Big Sleep, which is the movie they're watching?
I have. Yeah. I mean, like, I had to read it and watch it in college. It's funny because it's like famously the most confusing movie of all time. Like they didn't understand part of the plot when they were filming it. If I remember correctly, they called Raymond Chandler, who wrote the book, and he was like, damned if I know, like, why this happened or whatever. And then they had to reshoot scenes yes, I know about The Big Sleep.
But is this, I haven't seen it, is this episode kind of based off that, the plot at all?
There was
hoping for an episode, like a movie plot as an episode for the tally board, but I couldn't say.
No, I wouldn't say that. There was a lot about like these two sisters that were running up gambling debts and that type of thing. Like that's what that movie was about. That's where it starts, at least.
What a missed opportunity. Like, yeah. I guess they could only pick something from the WB catalog.
Well, I mean, I get why you do it, because like it is aesthetically like the most noir looking thing you've ever seen. Like, it's weird that they didn't get like Maltese Falcon or something like that, but meh.
Well, they drop a Sam Spade reference later on, right? But I'm thinking to myself, as someone who hasn't seen the movie, oh, I know what they did. They saw an old movie and they're like, let's do that as Smallville. But then that's not what they did. Like, if Jimmy got knocked out and imagined he was in the movie and all the characters' names were the same, and that would make more sense.
But the entire mechanism is
just flawed here, so.
Someone who understands the plot of that movie better can answer us on Twitter, but like, not that I recall that this has anything to do with that.
Well, strike out on that one as well. So let's go ahead and get knocked out and wake up in a black and white world where all of our jobs are different, but our names are the same. Noir.
I figured you could use an escape from your real life soap opera.
What do you mean?
Well, you live it every day, but from the outside. Your life's got Cagney and Stanwyck written all over it. You got your billionaire mogul. You got the confused damsel who shows money over love, and the mysterious best friend who shows up everywhere because he can't seem to get a real job. Not to mention the steadfast dame they all depend on.
Wow, a real glimpse into the mind of Jimmy Olsen.
Not bad.
FYI, dame, not so flattering.
Noir is the 20th episode of Smallville's 6th season. It aired on May 3rd, 2007. It was written by Brian Peterson and Kelly Saunders and directed by Jen Oswerk. Of course, from Supergirl the movie and Jaws 2 and Somewhere in Time. I think I say that every time. He's directed some great episodes of Smallville. Arguably one of the best in Homecoming, right? A Perry, right? I mean, he's go down the list. He's directed some great ones. This is not one of them, Matt.
This is not one of them. I do love Perry. Yeah. And then Brian and Kelly, who usually have a better pulse on the show than, like, think about what you want when they start running it. But I feel like their episodes are usually better than this. Do you have a take on that?
They wrote so many, right? I mean, they've obviously wrote some great ones and then, you know, some not so great ones. But, you know, they're in the trenches of the show, so to speak, right? So they, as you said, got the pulse on things. They take over the show. They're part of the executive producers in the later seasons. And, you know, this does feel like some spec script, right, that they bought, and somebody was like, hey, I like old movies in Smallville, let's mix it together. Like, it doesn't seem like something that would organically come from the writer's room who are writing regular episodes. So
it is so, like, coming from Lois and Clark, I know, like, it is such just kind of a filler
you know
episode.
What? General Swark might have directed this episode, but who directed the first shot of this episode? Mr. Chris Nolan.
Yes, he certainly did.
Because as it was in your last appearance on Always on the Smallville, we start out with stock footage from Batman Begins, don't we, Matt?
I only do episodes now where we start with the Narrows and it's raining. So
there's a couple more. So we'll have to look at the schedule. But yes, the Narrows. And I don't know why they try to make us think this is Metropolis. Like, I remember when I first saw, I'm like, oh, Gotham. But no, it's apparently just a rainy day in Metropolis.
Yeah. And in season 8, they get a Metropolis raining day. What am I saying?
Filter.
CGI. Yeah.
They got the rain plug in
CGI establishing shot. Yes, excuse me.
They just pull it over the Daily Planet, right?
Maybe that was it. It's just too hard to do back then. I have no idea. There's a lot to talk about with rain in this episode, but we'll get to that.
Oh, there is indeed. So, Jimmy and Chloe are having a date, but Chloe is still on the clock at the Daily Planet, which is very irresponsible. I mean, I think she's running the hotline.
You forwarded the call. Yeah.
I forwarded the call to this room. And he's you know, I don't know. Blindfolds are kind of easy to come by. But he insists on holding his hands in front of her eyes, walking her through the Daily Planet, which I think was an odd choice for the character.
Yeah, I can't speak to that being a good move. But I mean, like, you know, whatever. They're close. It's fine. It's before COVID. It's fine.
Have we talked about this? What is your pulse on the Jimmy-Chloe relationship?
No, we haven't talked about this. I never gave a damn about Chloe and Clark. So I thought it was a cute way to introduce him into the kind of main crew quickly. Again, this is back when we thought he was Jimmy Olsen. But because of that, I thought it was a cute way to introduce him. He's not just some kid that Clark meets when he starts working at the Daily Planet. He's been around for a little while. Like, I mean, the show plays with that with so many people, you know, like Lois in particular. So I was totally cool with the idea of how he came in here.
It's been the last half of season 6 here. Like, he's been away for some episodes, and so he had the Erica Durance contract, right? Where he's you're in 13 episodes, and we gotta like use you sparingly and fit you in. So
one might be about you. We'll figure it out.
Yeah, we know one's gonna be about you at the end of the season. We ran out of stuff to do. You know, Aaron Ashmore, he's a fun actor, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, his twin brother Sean was on Smallville a couple times, right? Iceman. And they're, you know, they're genre actors. They've been on Fringe. They've been on other shows. So they're fun to see. And he's a fun guy. I just, you know, to your point, you didn't care about Chloe and Clark. I did. So I'm like, who is this guy messing up?
Get out of here.
Messing up my, get out of here. See? Yeah.
Hey, use. Yeah.
But, you know, he takes her on. It's a very romantic setup, right? He has a film projector and popcorn and drinks. Like, this is a very nice romantic gesture. I think he set her up on a date, and they're going to watch an old movie. And I guess it's a thing they do. So
I particularly like, as someone who tries to get his girlfriend to watch superhero movies as often as possible, I particularly liked that they're watching one of his favorite movies, but he's like, yeah, because it reminds me of your life. You know, like, you're always going around following crazy leads or whatever. So,
and you got a best friend who can't keep down a job. I'm like, oh,
yeah,
wow,
that
okay,
was cute.
Throwing some shade at Clark.
I also like Chloe's just, like, completely unaware of the fact that her life is nuts. Like, he's saying this, and she's like, I guess, you know?
Yeah, it's like, no, from the outside, you got a crazy life.
Yeah.
Your best friend's in the hospital every week at this point.
Right. Not the alien, the other one.
Yeah, your other best friend.
Right.
He calls her a dame, and she's like, that's not very... He's with it, you know. But they start watching The Big Sleep, of course, a Warner Brothers picture, right? Because that's what they
do.
They own the rights.
Naturally.
That's great. Wait, they own the rights to show The Big Sleep, but God forbid they don't own the rights to the Superman music, let me tell you. So
I was amazed, though, that they got to show Bogey and Bacall on screen. Like, that feels like somebody had to be paid for that.
Yeah, that's where the budget went.
Maybe.
So they're watching the movie Jimmy Knows All the Lines. You know, I have favorite movies as well, but I just don't sit there and quote them to myself as I'm trying to impress someone. Like if I'm watching with a group, I might throw some lines to each other and have a laugh, but I'm like, it's a weird vibe, I think, you know?
I get you. I mean, you and I quote to each other all the time, you know? Like, but, It was just kind of cute to me that he was. It almost felt like he wasn't doing it for her. He was just like, it was muscle memory. He couldn't. Yeah. He couldn't help but. He just loves the scene. Yeah,
he's compelled to do it. Right.
Yeah.
So you know, it's cute, right? And hey, let's talk for a second about Chloe's look. Her ever-changing hair. I love this longer hair look they got for her now. I never liked that like very flat bangs and all that. They had the straightened hair they had for a few episodes there. I was not a fan of that. And this is a great look. I don't want to get in trouble here, but looking very Lois, right, with her vest and her shirt. Like, I don't know, working the Daily Planet. It's a very Lois-esque look. So much so that, as you'll see in season 7, Lois Lane, Erica Durance's Lois Lane, gets this very costume. So,
oh, really?
Yes. You'll see. Famously in the Apocalypse episode, might be the first time, but it's in other episodes as well. But just the purple shirt, the vest. Look it up, y'all.
Wow. Oh, I just, that made me so excited.
And you guys said I was crazy. But anyway.
I mean, can we just talk about this now? I loved Lois's outfit later on. It felt very, it was like a tweedy almost jacket. Like, I thought she looked great. It felt very Lois Lane to me, but that's so funny that there's two Lois Lane costumes in this episode.
So, yeah, the wardrobe was on point all the way around, I think, in this episode.
That's great.
But, you know, they're watching the movie and you hear a gunshot and it is cute. They're like, that wasn't the movie. They finish each other's sentences and they run out and there's a guy running up the staircase, and then Jimmy, you know, being the photographer, pulls out his flip phone and takes about 5 or 6 just spray and pray photos of him with his flip phone. And Matt, man, that they couldn't download these photos. This guy would have been in big trouble if they could have in that one pixel 2007 cell phone he had. But
if only Jimmy was on the cloud at that point. But it's funny to me because we see a digital camera later on in the episode, and it's just like, oh, this is right on the cusp where we had phones, you know, camera phones, but they weren't super useful yet. They were like what you were saying, like spray and pray. Is that what you said?
Spray and pray. That's a term we use in photography when like you go in without a plan. It's like spray and pray.
Yeah. Okay.
We see Jimmy Olsen take pictures on a flip phone, on a digital camera, and on his traditional camera this episode. So every form of photography. So Jimmy Olsen, photographer, is well represented in this episode. But that guy's gone, and then there's the elevator doors keeps closing and opening, right? And there's a leg and a dress.
Yeah,
a fancily dressed woman. And who is it but Lana Lang?
Miss Lana Lang. With a pool of blood coming out? Like, it looked good. It was very effective.
Yeah, that's creepy. A hook. That's a hook for you right there, right?
Totally.
So she's shot in the elevator, and you know we see this gun. I'm like, this is the Lex gun. It's the General MacArthur. I will return. I shall return. I have returned from Lionel, right?
And I'm turning.
And I don't know whether to give them credit or they're just like, oh, we have this gun prop and they kept reusing it. But forever, it's there a lot, and I give them credit. So
totally. And then it's a plot point later.
It is a plot point. So it came back around. So good on them there. But you know, we go to opening credits. We come back. Lionel's here. And he's John Glover has apparently gotten some stage role and gotten a haircut.
I was going to add, like, I liked this look for him, but yeah, I had questions.
Because he had come back almost like the mainish look, right, that we love so much from the earlier seasons. But very late season 6 here, and then season 7 for the most part, he has the... I guess the late season 4 look of Lionel. Right. The beard length and hair length of Lionel is just a fascinating thing to watch the growth and evolution of over the course of the show.
He's still doing Drowsy Chaperone every once in a while, so he's got to go back and keep it short.
So he goes over to Lana, who's getting taken off on a search. She's like, I'm sorry, I got you mixed up in this. I will find who did this. And, okay, didn't he hire someone to do this?
I'm unclear.
Okay.
I'm not trying to be cute. Like, I don't know.
Again, I don't revisit season 6 a lot, y'all, so this was all surprise. I thought it was black and white world, but there's a lot of things going on here and the overarching plot, which tie in, apparently.
Why would he have, though, if she was getting him information?
But she wasn't going to give it to him. She was going to give it to the press.
She was going
to
go to the press, so
that's
maybe...
That's the only way she could get out from under his thumb, right, as she explains later. So...
See, it's the big sleep. I don't know what's happening. You know?
But he did need to go like lie to her, like, because no one's here. He's like, I'm gonna find who did this. Like, I don't.
Right.
She's.
It's classic Lionel Luther gaslighting is what's
happening.
You cannot
peg this guy down. Cannot peg this guy down. So, Lex shows up, right? And and you texted me this when you're watching it. Flying Lana to a specialist in Smallville.
What the actual hell?
We were in Metropolis, one of the biggest, greatest cities in the world. I'm sure their medical care is
They're full of specialists, as we know from six seasons of the show.
But because we haven't made the Metropolis General set yet, which we'll make in season eight, we have to, like, guess. Like, come on, guys, just go find a generic hospital room. Like, we've done.
Paint the room.
We've done, like when Cyborg, right? That's an episode I think of. They're like, there are hospital rooms in Metropolis there. Just find a generic white room with a window, put up an X-ray and a bed, and we're good. But like, we have to, it's just absurd. That's like I should take away a point for a specialist from Metropolis for this nonsense. Lana and Lionel were supposed to go to the opera, but she didn't show, apparently, or something like that.
Right.
Or
that
Lex
feels like
busy.
A cover story.
Yeah, very convoluted stories going on here. This back and forth between Lex and Lionel establishes that. And then Clark shows up, plus one for blue shirt, red jacket. And he's like, what's going on here, right? You know, and Chloe has to come, you know, pull him off, right? And then Lois is here as well. And, you know, she's trying to get a scoop from one of the cops, right? And then he gets pulled off in a very intrepid reporter maneuver. She sees there's some evidence, you know, laid out on the ground there. And yes. So in order to get some of the evidence past the police tape line, she drops and spills her purse and then scoops everything into her purse. That's a great Lois Lane move. I loved it.
I loved it, too. It felt very Lois and Clark, kind of like cartoony easy. But all the same, we've only got so much story time left in you know, not black and white world. So let's get it done.
At the time, I wasn't sure. I didn't remember what was on the floor and what wasn't anymore. But she took something. I'm like, was it the lipstick? Was it the... we'll see what it was later on, right? But then we get to Clark, Chloe, and Jimmy all talking. And Clark's blaming himself. And Chloe's like, you can't do that. And Jimmy's, of course, you know, not in sync with the conversation because he doesn't know that Clark's an alien or anything that's going on here. So Chloe gives Jimmy the very important job of... downloading the photo. Very important job, Matt.
In another room, please.
The adults are talking, right?
Yeah, exactly.
I just never, like, the way Chloe treats Jimmy, occasionally he has a problem with it, and that's when I am proud of him. Mm-hmm. But most of the time he's like a pushover, right? And I don't like it because I feel like they're not equals. Right. And they never really are.
You.
And they're all out of sync. I mean, that's just beyond. I mean, taking aside my why you show up, they were going to kiss again in Zod and he
You're
was going to tell her he loved her. Anyway,
yeah.
Taking that aside, I just never really was invested. And then Supergirl shows up. Right. Next season. And then he's kind of into her.
Right.
And then Davis shows up and Chloe's kind of into him.
Yeah.
And then they get married, Jimmy and Chloe. But then it doesn't, you know. And then he dies, and he wasn't Jimmy Olsen.
For
so there's your character arc.
Yeah, exactly.
There's your character arc for this character. So anyway, but he's gone to the very important job of downloading this photo, and so we see a close up of his phone. It's a Sprint phone, and I'm like, is this product placement, Pete? It is, because we see multiple close ups of Sprint phones in this episode. So that is a plus one, my friends.
Didn't they have a tie in too?
Couldn't tell you off the top of my head, but you know, this season's AOL
it wasn't quite the Vengeance Chronicles.
Wasn't,
but yeah,
no,
it was
no
like
Acuvue
that.
To the
yeah.
rescue.
No.
No Brainiac file AOL instant messenger right. going on. So he has his little, you know, flip phone. And then he has his real camera because he'd been taking pictures of the crime scene. He took a picture of Lionel. Lionel kind of gave him some side
Lionel
eye,
wasn't
right?
happy about it, yeah.
You're like, so who's responsible for this, right? So there's lots of stuff working here. And then he gets knocked out. And then look, you see like a shadow pass by right in the room. And then he gets knocked out on his desk. So
as the big sleep is still playing too. So I guess that's key.
Yeah, I guess this is I guess it has to be the same room. That they had set up the movie in. Yeah. You know, it's hard to stop those film projectors. Best to just let them play.
Yeah, or the download was going to take forever. And he's like, you know, I'm going to wheel this in here.
How long is this movie? So all this happened in less than 2 hours.
Apparently.
Keep that in mind, folks. So he wakes up, and it is in a very Back to the Future style way of learning what date it is. He wakes up in the Daily Planet, and there's a newspaper, and it says May 3rd, 1940, which, of course, this episode aired on May 3rd, 2007, so it's the same day, but in the past. And he's met by Noelle Neal's Lois Lane, played by Allison Mack here, right?
Yeah, I mean, you know, Allison Mack stuff aside, I think she's great in this episode. She kind of nails this. There are some performances here that don't nail the period net, like the heightenedness of that, but mm-hmm. I think she does a really nice job. And I love her like kind of curly, I don't know what that hairstyle is, but it's a 40s hairstyle that you really don't see attempted very much. Like they really don't try hard with Lana at all.
No, Lana's straight out of 2007. Straight out of
2007. Yeah, the hair. Yeah.
But then she has a meet cute with Clark Kent, right?
Mm-hmm.
We got Tom Welling in some glasses here, Matt.
I was going to say, when was the last time we've had glasses?
This is the first real glimpse of him in the you know, black-rimmed...
The big ones,
if you will, glasses, because in back in Whisper in season 3, you know, he has just some wire glasses, which, of course, right. I got similar glasses at the same time, because that's how I live my life. But, wow, right? And then, you know, and of course, they show this in, like, the promo, and you're like, oh, wow, and that's it. Like, literally, this...
Really?
Could they not have made him wear it the entire flashback? Would it have been that difficult? It's like Tom was like, all right, look, I'll wear the glasses.
You
like,
get one.
You get one scene, one episode a season. And you think we're joking. This continues on. Season 7 in Apocalypse, he sneaks into a press conference wearing the glasses. Every fan trailer in the universe uses that, you know, clip. And then in season 8, he's like, hey, Lois, I got a secret to tell you. I'm nearsighted. And he puts on glasses. I'm like, oh, he's going to wear the glasses now. This is great. And then it's never a thing anymore. I don't think even season 9, I don't think he even attempts to wear glasses.
I can't think of it. But then, like, the last 2 or 3 episodes of season 10, to be like, there you go, fans, shut up.
There's Homecoming where he has the glasses. Lois keeps putting the glasses on in the future.
Right.
But then, like, you're right. Like, the last... five episodes, I feel, to give him a little more credit, but still, for a 10-year show with 218 episodes, I need more than 5 episodes of Clark Kent in these glasses. And but they're smaller in season 10. Tom was like, all right, I'll wear them, but you got to make them small. Like, I really don't know what the problem was. Like, glasses are in. Like, Smallville, it started too early. It's like, you're a nerd, blah, right? And now, like, glasses are sexy, glasses are trendy, people are wearing glasses, don't need them, right, just to look cool. And I guess, you know, I put Tom felt the same way about the glasses of the Superman costume, apparently, because he had a big aversion. Because it's this really cute scene where it's a classic, oh, Clark Kent bumps into somebody, he meets him picking up all these things. Right. Oh, I'm Clark Kent. You know, he would have
been
so
good. Adjusting the glasses,
pushing
him up.
this one's so sad. He would have been so good doing the thing. He just refused to do it, Matt. So anyway.
He might have been. Like, I wish we had seen that he'd been more willing to do that. Because, like, His Clark does not have a sweetness that I get from Dean Cain and Tyler Hoechlin's performances that I really think is kind of crucial to Clark Kent. And maybe it's part of that's just kind of like big dude vibrato thing that kept him out of the cape and these glasses are dumb and that type of deal.
Yeah. So he's the guy from the mailroom or something. I think, you know, that's his cover.
Yes.
And because Jimmy's like, who's that? And, you know, Chloe and Jimmy have a moment with Clark. And I'm like, look, it's just the Daily Planet team. It's great in the 40s, right? But anyway, he goes on his way. And that's the last we see of Clark in suspenders and clumsy glasses. And I'm like, this is what I wanted for, I mean, you know, seasons at least 8 through 10. He should have been wearing glasses, right? Like, I'll give you the everything up till there. I'll give you, right? But come on.
I forgot about that nearsighted thing. That would have been perfect.
And they even put it in the credits, Matt. So mad. I just remembered that. How dare you? Anyway. Okay. All right. Joel, well, just like they show Clark flying in the credits, right? I'm like, come on, y'all.
This is a rough episode all around, dude.
We're
I'm
zeroing
sorry.
In on this. This was a nice little Superman, just a little peek through the keyhole.
They gave
of what
us
we could
a moment,
have.
And we're like, screw them.
We're impossible to please, I swear.
Yeah.
So anyway, Chloe is Jimmy's secretary or something in the 40s.
Yeah.
Gets him some coffee. You're the best reporter here, and I'm going to say it now, right?
I'm Slinging Joe for you, and I chose you because... Yeah, exactly.
Slinging Joe. So good.
Whatever.
So then Jimmy gets a phone call. It is funny because Chloe's like, am I supposed to open your phone? Well, answer your phone now for you, too. And so I'm like, well, you're my secretary, right? Isn't that what you're supposed to do? Anyway, it's the 40s, man. So,
wow, okay.
Jimmy picks up the phone. And it's a sultry voice on the other end. And it's a close-up of some lips. And it's like, I'd like to report a murder. And Jimmy's like, who? Mine.
Ba-ba-bum.
Iris out. All right?
I love the Iris
stuff
in this.
Wipes in, right?
Yeah.
It's funny. It's inconsistent because some commercials just cut, like it's in the episode. I was like, oh, well, you didn't really commit.
Oh, interesting. I especially noticed there's an iris into the now black and white establishing shot of Luther Mansion that we've seen since season one. And I thought that looked particularly like an old timey movie, just the way the water was hitting. You know, it was interesting.
Now that we're in the 40s fantasy land here, let me read a quote from the companion from Jenno Swark talking about kind of their thinking making this episode. Quote, Glenn Winter and I spent a lot of time talking about the style. The minute I read Noir, I said, this is fantastic. We decided to do it in black and white and shoot it in the style of the period. Nothing is as tight as it is in the normal Smallville. It's more two shots and three shots and strong composition and low angles. In terms of the look, we said, we're going to be faithful to this genre. We didn't do those extreme close-ups, which are the signature of Smallville, and composition became much more important. We had models for all the characters. For Allison, it was Lucille Ball in those screwball comedies of the 1940s. Erica was Renee Hayworth in Gilda, and I told Kristen to watch Ava Gardner in The Killers. Tom modeled himself after Cary Grant. Michael, I told him not to be so precise with his phrasing, and to make it more like George Raft, and Aaron was modeled on Dennis Morgan. So,
I know some of those people.
Okay, yeah, you're a student of old Hollywood, man.
Not most of them, to be honest.
Half and half for me, I guess. You know, Cary Grant, of course. Right? I mean, Christopher Reeve famously based his Clark Kent off Cary Grant for Bring Up Baby. And
Really? I didn't know that.
And I mean, I didn't see a lot of Cary Grant and Clark to be.
No, Cary Grant, the most charming man ever put on screen. No, I didn't get any of that here.
I'm a cop, you see. So we come back in from the commercial break, as I said, and it's we get irises out and wipes in, and you know, this classic transitions, just fun. Some stock footage of Times Square, which is nice. I don't know if it was real or from a movie or what. We see some car chase later as well. I didn't. We both looked up. We couldn't find where this footage came from the WB archives, no doubt. Right.
Yeah. So I have questions though, because that car flips, and then there is an old timey car flipped, and Lexco.
Seamless. Seamless transition of footage.
There is an old-timey stock footage shot that I do know where it came from, but we'll get to that cool thing later.
Oh, we will. Oh, we will, my friend. So, good, because I thought it was that, and I wasn't sure, but now I'm sure. So, thank you. Stay tuned to find out, listeners. So, Jimmy's meeting Lana in the shady back alley.
Very whispery, Lana.
And to your point, Lana looks straight out of, 2007. Like, she just looks like she dressed up going out for it. I mean, she looks great, right? It's just like all these other characters are so tailored to like the 40s, and she looks like Kristen Kirk does on a nice night out of the town. So,
yeah, her hair is slightly curled, but there was nothing overly period.
Well,
about
think about the
look for me.
Think about Relic, right? Where she was in the 60s, right? I'm like, oh, okay, sure. she looks like she's of the time period. So that, I think that's where I'm comparing it to, and that's what we're saying there. So she tells Jimmy that Lex is trying to kill her. And he says, actually, it's James. And I'm like, come on. Like, why you just set me up for this slam dunk on you show? Like, it's like, it's not James. It's Henry James Olsen, okay? And I know they didn't know that at the time. Although, they did claim, like, oh, we knew all along you couldn't be the real Jimmy Olsen. The movies wouldn't let us do it. I'm like, what? Like,
that seems like garbage, though.
He was in the DVD special features with all the other living Jimmy Olsens at the time. I don't know what happened, but he was not supposed to be Henry James Olsen at this point. But when you set me up like that with him clarifying what his name is, I have to dunk on your show. By the way, we found out the address for the Daily Planet, at least in this 1940s Fantasyland, 1000 Broadway.
Yes, so, very interesting.
Sure, I'm going to go with that.
I've seen Terry Hatcher's business card from Lois and Clark. I don't remember what it said. Damn. I'll have to check.
So Lana tells Jimmy, James, actually, that her husband's sneaking out every night and he's going to the Talon, right?
She gives him a beautiful cigarette case with something on it that apparently we were supposed to be looking at. And it opens it up to like an old timey logo of the Talon on a
matchbox.
Matchbox. Yeah. A book of matches. Yeah.
And in the Batman animated series font, perhaps. Yes. I don't know. It's Frank Gothic Bold, I believe. That's listen to me.
Wow.
Look it up. I might be right. I might be wrong, but I'm putting it out there. Put it out there into the world. So now riddle me this, Matt.
Yes.
Have Jimmy and Lana had a scene together up to this point?
Ooh, is it one of those? I guess not.
It's kind of like when Lionel and Lana met when he was in Clark's body. Jimmy and Lana met when Jimmy's fantasy. I really can't think of one, right? Because he's never invited to any of these things, like the rehearsal dinner.
Right.
He shows up there after Lana's been kidnapped. The wedding, he's not in that episode.
Right. She comes to his, weirdly enough.
Wasn't... No, Linda Lake, no. I'm just thinking of all the...
No. Weird.
He's not... Obviously, Chloe and Jimmy are not invited to the Halloween party or whatever that was when he's Alexander the Great and she's Cleopatra. Right. Yeah. No, I mean, I'm sure someone like screaming at us, no, you forgot the scene where, I mean, I don't know. But he was like, you know, Daily Planet world, hanging out with Chloe. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, Clark and their whole world is very separate from Lana and Lex's. He's had scenes with Lex. That was actually a really great scene early in the season where he like laughs at him and intimidates him out of his office. I do not think Lana and Jimmy had a scene together.
Wow. And they still kind of haven't because...
Yeah, well, we'll keep an eye on that.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, and then he leaves. It's going to be season 7 by the time they have a scene. Please keep an eye on that for us. That was surprising to me, by the way. I'm like, oh, he left for the season early.
I have no memory.
So, and of course, it's the whole femme fatale private detective, but Jimmy's a reporter, so he's kind of filling the role of that private detective. And then it's like Jimmy has kind of had, they don't play into it too much, where he kind of has a thing for Lana, right? But it's like, it's the tropes of the time, which again is so odd since they have zero interaction on the show, and that's what made me think of it. So,
yeah, no, fair enough. But they are 100% leaning into that, you know, bogey always falling for the woman that he's after.
That was a dame, see?
Yeah.
I kind of want to forget, but you can't. So following this matchbox, Jimmy tries to get into the town, which is kind of a seedy nightclub.
It's a bit speakeasy-ish. Yeah,
like Prohibition era.
Oh, yeah, it's the wrong period, but yeah, it's seemingly seedy. There's crime boss, you know, young Luther over there every night. I will say I admired their commitment to smoking in this episode.
You know, you don't think about it, right? You're like, we're seeing all these cigarettes. Are people actually going to smoke? And you know what? They did. So good on them
for
that.
They did.
So
that set must have smelled like garbage with all those clove cigarettes going at the time.
But Jimmy can't get in, but then Clark appears out of the shadows, like, the kid's with me, let him in. And apparently Clark is working as a bouncer or a security at this club owned by the Luthers.
Seemingly.
Right?
All
right,
I have questions about that, too, because are Lionel and Lex father and son in this
world? He's calling him Pops. He's like, he used to run this town.
Call
Pops.
Call him Paps. Yeah.
But now the only shots you're calling are from behind the bar. That's good stuff. You know, there's some kernels of good stuff in here, right? But So Clark helps him in, and there's a strange almost POV shot, almost like a handheld, like Clark's like, come on in. And that was cool because this is his dream, but that's like the only time they do that. And it stuck out to me as I liked it, but it felt kind of random. Did you see that as well?
I did see it. I thought it was a nice, it felt like what they said in The Companion. I thought camera-wise, they did a nice job mimicking the noir-y stuff in this from time to time. And that felt very like, here you go. Like, welcome to this underbelly of this little town outside the city, you know?
And then, you know, we get some dialogue like, cool your jets, Mac. And it's like kind of thing. Like, you know, because Lionel, I love Lionel as the bartender. I guess he filmed those scenes first because he has his little mustache, right?
Oh, his pencil thin mustache is perfect. Yeah.
So he must have filmed these first and then grew out the beard later for the proper Lionel in the real world later.
Maybe.
So how do you think John Glover does with the 40s nature of it all?
I thought he killed. I mean, like he's a theater actor. Like I thought
John Glover, the John Shea of Smallville, John Glover, right?
Yes, yeah. I thought he like knows how to do this. He knows what's being asked of him. That I also thought Michael did a good job in this scene too. He's a bit affected in his voice. You know, like I liked it.
They don't give Michael much to do, honestly.
No,
but for what he does, it's good. But you know who they do give a lot to do? Erica Durance as Lois, right?
Yes,
she comes down the stairs. And a song comes on, and this is her. This is Erica Durance singing this song. This is her actual voice. In The Companion, she says, quote, I've always wanted to sing and act at the same time professionally. The audience would be able to tell, so I wanted to use my own voice. People can take it or leave it, but at least it's me singing. The whole episode was fun, playing this torch singer with the hair and the makeup. What girl doesn't like to step into a bit of glam? And the black and white, when everything was so glamorous, to be photographed that way is really classy. So...
I love how game she is for all the weird
all this absurdity she's like bringing yes. on. Like, I love it yep. too. I love it as well. And this is a very, so this does count as Lois's costume closet, right? Because I have this tally Ooh. Board and it's a fantasy, but it's a, we got to remove ourselves from the narrative of the show. And it's like Lois in outfits, but everybody is like this because it's the time period. So
yeah,
I would say
I guess
no.
Not.
I wanted to
I
mention
would say
it,
no because
bring
of
it up
that.
For conversation, but it's like, hey, Lois is the lounge singer, which I feel like we saw all the time in Lois and Clark. Maybe it was just once or twice. But
it was twice, which is enough. But I was going to bring that up, like carrying on a fine tradition that Terry Hatcher has laid down. Yes.
You're not the Lois Lane until you're seeing at a seedy nightclub, mm-hmm. apparently.
For Lex Luthor, yeah.
Yeah, for Lex Luthor, indeed. Mm-hmm. I think Clark says something to Jimmy like, oh, I see what you're looking for here. Yeah. And Jimmy's like, no, that's not what I'm here for.
Yeah, if that's what you're looking for, take a number. You know?
That's what it is. That's what it is, right? Then he looks over and he sees Lex there, and that's like kind of start making the connection and all right. that. And then Clark's on him like, oh, you're looking for a story. Kid like you wouldn't be seen here. We're looking for a story, see? What's the scoop?
We're huh? giving Tom such a better accent than he's actually
doing. I'm
doing
a much
doing,
better job but, yeah. at the voice than Tom yeah. is, because he's like, I'm uh-huh. not doing that. That's I can just see him like, I'm not doing no. that. That's dumb.
Right.
That's Tom's entire attitude towards half the things they
I sound stupid. Meanwhile, John Glover's got a pencil-thin mustache and is just going for it, blowing smoke in Jimmy's face, you know, killing it.
I have all due appreciation for Dean Cain as like Ricky Ricardo and all these ridiculous things now. It's like, well, at least he went for it, right? But anyway, Clark's the bouncer going off to do his duty, and so Lionel talks to Jimmy, and he's like, I'm looking for a tip. I'll give you a tip, yeah. kid. Luther makes a big scene when he leaves the bar, but he's not in the car when it drives off. Huh?
This is when he's like, his smoke acting is perfect. He takes a drag right before he like blows it into Jimmy's face with his last line. It's good.
As explained, Lex gets up, walks out, and they do this weird switcheroo where they walk behind this phone booth, and a guy that like I guess a double right for Lex
was hanging out. Yeah,
gets in this car, and then Lex goes and gets in another car and drives off. Which is odd. I thought he didn't leave the club because that's where him and Lois were doing their business, like in the back room or something.
Oh,
but they
hanky panky. Yeah.
Right, because that's why he'd want to think people thought he left, but he hadn't left. Right. So that makes no sense. But I guess they wanted to use the Kent Farm set this episode. So
I was gonna say he didn't want a tail. See.
Yeah. And yeah. Then, so Jimmy's following all the way there. I don't know where he. I don't know where this stuff is supposed to be taking place. By the way, I know it's
that's
not
a great
the Kent
question
Farm.
Too.
Right. Like,
no, it's we're just using sets that we have.
Is it New York? Like, at least, you know what? At least they didn't go to Oliver Queen's Loft. I give him credit there.
You try making that place look period. There's no way in hell. There's no way in hell.
But I did have to sigh when I saw the barn. I'm like, all right.
Full of old cars and stuff. It's funny.
But riddle me this, Matt. Much like I asked about Jimmy.
You're riddling me so much
Lana,
today.
Yeah. Yeah. How many scenes? And I know there's been some, right? But really, how many scenes have Lex and Lois had together?
I don't know. That was fun for me here, too.
It's so strange
to see
them.
I'm sorry to Lois and Clark so much, but like, you know, they have a romantic relationship and that for a bit. And to see them together here for this brief moment felt so odd.
Well, and you know, but it did make me think of the Fly Hard, right? Because, I mean, Lex is doing
sure,
his thing
yeah.
in a tuxedo, and Lois is in her kind of whole outfit there, and yeah, and you know, to the point, and the show proper, they were in a relationship. It's so odd to me because I like watching Smallville from the start, right? Mm-hmm. It's like you have your Lex years, and then you have your Lois years, and there's so yeah. little overlap. I mean, obviously they're on the show together for several seasons, but they have like no interaction. Lucy's a big episode they interact in because right. they're looking for Lucy Lane. Some of the early running for Senate. Episodes like you uh-huh, know like he insults her being a you know muffin peddler college dropout. I remember that line very distinctly for some reason.
Apparently,
wow, I just surprised myself with that one.
That was great. You might have to quit this.
But oh yeah, season 7 they do have a little more because she's you know at the Daily Planet and he's like Merry Christmas, right. Lois. I just bought the Daily Planet. There we go. I can remember some dialogue from other seasons too. The whole well, a Grant Gabriel Julian Luther subplot. There's some.
Yeah.
They have some scenes there, but seriously, like for a show with 218 episodes, I would wager a guess that Lex Luthor and Lois Lane interact in less than 10 episodes of this show.
That feels right to me. Interact like share. We're in the same room.
Yeah.
Yeah.
shared dialogue
that
together.
That feels right to me.
Right. Which is a shame, right? Because the timing was just so off. Like, I often think to myself, you know, peak Clark is like season 9. And I wish that season 9 Clark interacted with like season 7 Lex, right? Or season Lex, 6 yeah. Lex. But it's like, no, the syncing is all wrong and all this. So anyway, we go into this minutia here because it's these little bits and pieces of things that we didn't see in other places, right, and whatnot.
Which makes this crazy dream fun, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you know, we're just going to blow through and get back to the real world because there's really nothing there. But so we're just diving into this fantasy world, right? But Jimmy comes out with a giant flashbulb 1940s camera. Classic paparazzi. Like, they kiss, like, Lois is like, is this real? He's like, does this feel real to you? And then they kiss. And I remember that from the trailer as well. All this trailer dialogue, right? And the flashbulb obviously shocks them, and Jimmy runs off, and then Lex runs after him, and we get some stock footage of some car chases from the 40s, right?
Yep. No idea where this footage came from. But then the thing that baffled me is, like, I think there's a shot of a train, and Jimmy's in one car, Lex is following him. Jimmy's car goes past the train as it's coming up the track. I'm pretty sure that that is a CG car that goes by there. But then there is a shot that feels like sped up properly of old-timey footage of Lex's car, like, going along the train for a second and then totaling and flipping. And then he walks out of a very similar looking car. And I'm like, I don't know where old footage ends and new footage begins. It's pretty well done.
Well, and I think being black and white helps, you know, 100% meld that together.
Yes.
Which no, I applaud them for that. Like, I was thinking, like, that's a good way to get some production value.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they have time to, like, rent and choreograph, right? Get stunt drivers. Like,
no,
of course
they're not doing this. Yeah.
And hey, it's not from Batman Begins, and it's not from Terminator 3, so good on you for going slightly past 2000s in your archive footage search, the WB archives there.
Yep.
That's a relief. Lex gets out of the car. He's okay. Go to commercial. We come back, and it's an Iris Inn at the Luther Mansion.
Yeah,
this shot you mentioned.
That Luther shot I liked, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Now, that's some season 1 stock footage, but we put that black and white filter on it, it looks classy, right?
It looks good, yeah.
Jimmy comes in, talks to Lana.
Forever at this fireplace, the poor
yeah,
girl.
Yeah, the fireplace again, right? The set dressing is a little bit different. There's some, like, cushy chairs and stuff,
yeah.
So I give them a little credit there.
That's an easy set to make, period. You know, like, I think they chose their worlds to kind of change well here with the scenic design like that.
Right.
Again, if only they'd pay a little more attention to her hair.
I don't know what
it's
is.
It's a bummer.
But
it should have more curls in it or just be up.
Jimmy had developed that photo pretty quick. I don't know what the developing
I
time...
know, and it was tiny, too.
Yeah, I expected a giant, like, 8x10.
Right.
Know. He's like, yeah, you're right about your husband. And, you know, Lex and Lois kissing, and he shows that to Lana. And Lana's like, if I run away, he'll find me. And if I leave him, he'll kill me and make it look like an accident. And, you know, as often these femme fatales do, they trick the hero of the piece to doing their dirty work for them, right?
Yes.
And so Jimmy's like, I'll take care of Lex. And she's like, oh, well, here's a gun just for your own
protection,
of course. I just
happen to have this here.
Yeah, just ready to give you. See, I didn't buy Jimmy's motivation in this fantasy because, again, like, if it were Chloe, who he's in a relationship with, maybe. That's why.
Or
this
if he had a crush on Lana that we knew about, you know, like that.
Please don't do that to poor Chloe.
I'm not saying it. Like, I get what you're saying, but, like, we've got Supergirl in the next season, then Davis, as you said. Like, my point is, it's completely detached from the world of the characters that we know.
Well, and this is something I do want to delve into for a second. Was it a dumb decision to make that A-B correlation to these fantasy characters, right? Because he's solving the crime, but it's nothing to do with anything. Like Lois and Clark, like we talk about on Flyhard, they have no correlation to who they are now. They're just, we need to show actors from the 40s. Here they are as our actors
right there.
That's it.
Which I probably complained about whenever I did that episode for the podcast, but I think it works better. If it's not going to play into actually what's going on, because that's the thing here, like, this is kind of just plot-wise a waste, because all we learn from it is the cigarette case, which Lois has already picked up and we already kind of knew was weird anyway, because why would Lana have the cigarette case? So the fact that it's just kind of spinning wheels like this with our characters, but none of it means anything, it just makes it weightless, it makes it gutless.
There's no insight. Like, it's funny because at the beginning of the episode, and they, you know, if they plotted this out correctly, they might have been able to really pay off on this, right? But Jimmy, as you said, Jimmy explains to Chloe how this is how he sees her life, right? And she's like, oh, right. Some insight into the mind of Jimmy Olsen. And like, oh, that's now we're going to see that in this fantasy world that Jimmy Olsen is having. And we don't see that at all. It has nothing to do with anything.
No. If she played more of a central part in it, then maybe that would have made sense.
Yeah, she's barely, she kind of, she fought. I'm like, is that the only scene with Chloe? I mean, obviously she comes back at the end, but she, yeah. After that first introductory scene where we meet Clark, that's your main impression of that scene. We don't see her for many, many scenes.
We should preface, too, that we now know that it's hard to plot out these episodes. So, like, you know, I get it, but...
Like, I know. Episode 20, you start running out of gas. You're like, I don't know. Maybe he has a dream and some black and white. Let's save us some money, you know? So...
He hasn't taken enough pictures this season. Oh, fine. He'll take 18.
Here's three different forms of photography. Yeah. So, he goes and meets up with Lex. Obviously, he had contacted him of, like, making some kind of deal to not release the picture, right, to the press. And
the rainiest gas station in all the world.
We have a classic Rosenbaum acting move that I've identified watching Smallville. The forearms. He does the forearms thing.
Oh.
Where he just raises his forearms, like, I don't know. It's just, if you see it, like, he does it consistently. And I guess it's just an acting thing he does to kind of gesture. And I always... like zone in on now when I see him do it, and it's an observation. It's, you know,
sure.
It is off.
No, it's not a critique.
Yeah. It's out of his tool bag of emoting. Right, he's gonna raise just the forearm. Shoulders are close to the body. Forearms up at a 45-degree angle. So
okay, I thought it was funny the production values of this scene. Like, they pumped in so much rain on these two actors, it was distracting to the point where, like, Lex has this big wide brim hat. Anytime he moves, like a bucket of rain falls off the rim of his hat into his face. Like, it just, like, you know, they are always shooting in Canada, and anytime you look at the ground in an outside shot in Smallville, you can see that, you know, there's rain coming down. Yeah, exactly. I just felt so bad for these actors during this, but it did look good.
It did. Very, yeah. Very film noirish.
Mm-hmm. And very film noirish, our hero transgresses when he didn't have to. In this.
That's right, because I knew you were going to leave your wife. She was right about you. He's like, yeah, I was going to have a divorce, which I, like, signed the papers like today.
Right.
And he's like, oh, you're not the first sucker to get trapped in her web, right? And bad move by Lex to kind of, like, he was going to pull out his cigarette holder, but Jimmy, of course, thinks
very
it's a
quickly.
Gun. Yeah. He's like, I suggest you get out or something like that. Right? He says something vaguely threatening. And then Jimmy, of course, is on edge, so he freaks out and pulls out the gun Lana gave him and shoots Lex. And I guess I should ask, is this the main character death?
Is it, I mean, ugh,
what are
I
the rules
know.
Here, right?
Did we count the ones in Scare? Is Scare is the
episode? I don't know.
They
play it a lot of service here. Where it's like, Lex Luthor's dead. Ah, right. But it's like... It's
yeah, we go down the row of guys calling in the report or whatever.
You know, we counted Chloe's death in Labyrinth because it was presented as real, but we knew this was fake from the jump.
Yeah.
So I think that's kind of where I fall on it. Like, I would...
No, but it feels to me kind of like Alana Kills in this situation, where it's just like, I know she's not, but she's got a gun in way too much of this episode for me to feel, you know, like...
Well, we see Lex Luthor get shot
into
and
the
die. So, yeah, I think that's exactly. Like, there's a reason we not just the fact that is it canon? Is it right?
Right.
That's
right.
It's like, no, we see this character die, you know, and we count a lot of dying in Crisis. And that was a weird either alternate timeline or something. So I say we counted here.
All right. If go cool for it then.
I defer to the guest, as always, Matt. So anyway.
The guest allows.
Very good. Very good. So then we wipe to the news, a flurry in the newsroom, right? People like,
yes.
All these guys in these, this is cool to see this kind of old Hollywood reporting style stuff, right?
No, I loved this kind of like, it's a nice, like tracking shot down the line of telephones that they have at the Daily Planet of guys just talking way too fast and Luther slain and blah, 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 blah. And then we cut to, Chloe doing some awesome Chloe work. She's talking to the woman that's running the switchboard, and the woman's telling her, like, oh, can you believe it? Like, Mr. Luthor's been slain, and they've got this, you know, we don't know who it is. And Chloe.
There it is.
Chloe,
there it is.
Yep. I get it. Chloe instantly, like, spills her sarsaparilla on the woman to go, you know, get her out of there and takes over. And here's the vaguest description from a cop of the man seen on the scene. And realizes that it's Jimmy. Rightfully so.
That must be Jimmy. He's the only 5'10" Caucasian guy with a trench coat in town.
Right, exactly.
So we see Jimmy. He's back at the Talon drinking away. Give me another shot, you know.
And, amazing Lionel in this scene too.
Which is?
Which is like he, you know, Lionel can see that he's all messed up about a dame. And nothing simple about him, kid. I guess that's what keeps us coming back for more. It's just like, this is pretty good. And Jimmy looks like properly disheveled for an old movie where you're drinking too much. Like,
I
his
agree.
Hair is a little messed up. Like,
I think I really started to buy him more now in this phase of his fantasy than before. It was like, I mean, obviously he was kind of putting on an act, right? But
I'm complimenting a lot of this noir stuff. Maybe it's just the Lana look that takes me out of it. Although her Carmen Sandiego look coming up is pretty great. But
so good. So good. Yeah. Chloe has searched every gin joint in town, quote unquote.
Yeah.
Right, to find Jimmy, and she tells him she thinks that Clark and Lana were having an affair, because as soon as Clark Kent came down, that number was being dialed, Lana Luther's phone number, so she's connected the dots, right? And Lionel, who's overheard this gives Lana a call, tips her off, right? And then we see, you know, she is dressing herself after being undressed.
Post-coitus.
There it is. And Clark comes out of, you know, the bathroom, whatever, wearing an undershirt. And I really did like this line, right? Lana's like, I have to go take care of something. I'll be back. And Clark says, I thought that's what I was here for. I didn't expect that.
Great.
Right? I mean,
perfect.
It's like they can be more risque in the 40s than they can in 2000s on this show, apparently, but whatever.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Oh, and they, you know, they love, like, oh, we got a claw to kiss it. Ah, right. You know, mm-hmm. they're all super excited about it. Let's have to keep finding alternate ways to get these characters together. But anyway, but here's where the shot we were so psyched about. We have an establishing shot of what, Matt? Talk us through it.
The Daily Planet building from the George Reeves Adventures of Superman show. As far as I know, it's just straight pulled out of that show, right?
Yeah, it's awesome. I was about to go look. I'm like, I'm 95% sure that's that, but where else would that have come from?
Right. It took me a second too, because I'm like, oh cool, it looks like that old type of oh I know what that is. Yeah, exactly. It was awesome. It was just such a nice little touch for nerds like us 20 years later talking about it, and I really appreciated it. Something I did not catch the one and only time I watched this episode before this, by the way.
I don't think I had either. That's why I had doubts, right? And, Adventure Superman, I kind of talked about it. I actually been talking about more recently, where it's talking about legacy casting and things like that on the show. It's
sure.
like that's something that they kind of got overlooked. I don't know why they never got Noelle Neal or Jack Larson. Like, they could have. They were in Superman Returns, right? Lois and Clark got them.
Yeah, so, very true.
But, you know, if you're going to do something like this, and obviously, like I said, some of the visuals paid homage to that. I mean, just because the very nature of the time period.
One thing I did want to go back and look for, because we see, I'm a whore for production design, like we see the Daily Planet logo in like an old timey look.
Oh, or we see the date, yeah, exactly.
Yeah, and we see like, you know, a Lex Luthor publication or whatever on it. Like, I wonder if that was pulled from then, but I think it's too influenced by the Donner stuff to have been that. But it felt very, very old timey too.
Yeah, so you know, paying homage or you know Easter egging when you can, I think that's really cool, and to literally be from the show is what's so cool to us anyway. So right. Jimmy goes in there thinking he's going to confront Clark, right? Because he walks in and there's this shadow silhouette of this hat, right? Mm-hmm. Like, Kent, you think you're going to set me up? All right, and he goes all the way into the room, and we see, as you said, Lana is Carmen Sandiego.
Oh, she looks great in this. Like the big coat with the lapels and the hat just so, and like kind of that, like some of my big references for noir are Batman the Animated Series, but that kind of like Talia al Ghul, like
hair
over the one eye thing. Like it's very effective. I liked that look.
Mm-hmm. And she explains that she set up Jimmy, right, to take care of a business. A typical femme fatale. You see this a lot in this kind of story, and you know, it works. Has no bearing on the actual plot of this episode.
Again, just spinning wheels over here, yeah.
But she's going to shoot Jimmy, right? He's like, I'm going to go up the river for this, or whatever, and she's like, oh, you won't live long enough to see the day!
Right.
Whatever, right? So she shoots him, but then she gets shot by Clark.
By Clark? Her lover.
And Clark shoots her, and she's like, why'd you do it? And she says, it was all for you. Of course, I'm doing this for us.
Right. But turns out he's a coppa, so what are you going to do? One thing I didn't realize that bothered me until just now, how many scenes in this don't feature Jimmy Olsen?
Oh.
Either conversations between characters, that are away from him. Like, we're in his dream, right? So is he just seeing these things, you know, omnisciently too,
oh,
while he's
man,
sitting at the
that's
bar
a great
or
point.
Whatever?
And they had done it so well this season in Labyrinth, right? Where it was just all Clark, all his perspective, right? That's a good point. Like, yeah, we shouldn't see the secret phone call. There should be no subplots.
No secret phone call. No them, you know, post-coitus. No even, like, start of Lex and Lois in there, too?
Yeah.
Interesting.
Are you saying this episode wasn't properly thought out, Matt?
Was a little
implying?
Thin? Yeah.
But Jimmy got saved by his rosebud. I mean, gardenia cigar case. Batman 89 style, right? So I guess those things really can. Yeah, where he puts the where Joker comes in,
oh,
he shoots.
Oh yes,
Bruce,
of course.
And
with the serving tray,
the bulletproof serving tray, and bulletproof cigar case. It's the 40s. I believe they made stuff to that quality back then. Today, you'd probably bullet would go right through. You'd be dead. So please don't try it today. Lana presumably dies from Clark's gunshot. He's an undercover cop. He reveals his little Metropolis badge, which is of course Superman Pentagon, which is. The Superman Pentagon in the Metropolis. That's consistent with Smallville, even though it was some fantasy land in the 40s. Whatever.
Right. They didn't redesign that. That's too expensive.
Clark's like, I forgot rule number one. Never get mixed up with a girl when you're on the job. Ah. So, and then he says a line very similar to No One Stays Good in This World from Henry Cavill's Superman. Tom Welling says, there are no heroes in Metropolis. So thank you, Tom Welling.
Very, very Chinatown feeling, you know, like I did enjoy that.
Jack, let it go.
Yeah, exactly. Right.
That, oh, you know what? That makes me like that better now. I like that. Yeah, because he's like, those eyes are going to send you up the river, son. I don't know if they even say send you up the river. Oh, give me the electric chair. That's what it is.
Give me the chair.
Send you up the river. I can say that. So anyway,
I bought it. Like, it sounds fine.
Yeah, because then like everybody comes in and takes the picture of him. And I guess the only thing that kind of ties into with like those are like paparazzi taking pictures of him.
Right.
In the real world, he gets his picture on the front page later on, and maybe that's some kind of tangential tie together. But these flashes wake him up, Matt, and we're back. We're back to the episode. We've spent half this episode on something that does not matter.
Doesn't matter. Just making us, just so that he could say gardenia, just because he noticed that, I guess.
Oh, because Lex said that to Jimmy before he died too, gardenia.
Right, right, like, right. It's been
you are not Citizen Kane's show. Do not rosebud us.
No kidding. But also, like, we see the case enough, but we don't see what's on it very well. And I'm like, are we supposed to be noticing that it's got this gardenia on it this whole time?
Yeah, and an LL for Lillian Luther, no doubt?
That I noticed, yeah.
Yeah, so when Jimmy wakes up, he starts, like, putting all the pieces together, and he starts talking to himself, and Chloe's like, hey, I'm here, talk to me, what's going on? And he's like, he ties in a lot of the whole thing, right? And he, this line, he says, I know you don't want to think of your friend as a double-crossing, two-timing backstabber. Like, damn, Jimmy, you were in love with this girl in your dream. Like, what's your take on Lana?
In fact, I don't, Jimmy. Yeah.
Oh, man, the mind of Jimmy Olsen. But then they're like, what if, you know, what if we found out where Lana was last because the elevator has a memory? Let's pull it up on the computer. But that, no, this
Who
elevator
knew?
Does not have a
Who
memory.
Who knew?
That's,
yeah.
No. You can't hack the elevator, Chloe. But they go up to whatever floor she was on last, and they find a reporter. And this reporter has a different name, but he's been at the Daily Planet before, right? Brennan.
Oh, really?
Played by Richard Conan.
Okay.
He appeared as Pauline Kahn's right-hand man, Biddleman, in Thirst.
Wow.
So
Biddleman.
Why would you change his name?
It's I don't
so
know.
Cool. It's
That's
Brennan
a bummer.
Biddleman. I mean, Stephen
and
S.
It's
DeKnight
not like he's
wrote that episode, right? And he's still on staff. So it's like, it's not like they had to pay someone to use a name. It's not a Tom Paris, Nick Locarno situation. Five people out there know what I'm talking about. But
I don't.
So okay, Craig knows.
Okay, it's fine.
So
I know you said a Voyager thing. That's the best I can do.
But anyway, it's like, okay, that's cool. Like, but at least the doctors get to have the same names, right?
Yeah, Smallville. And it's not like they're recasting a character and like he was Lex's bodyguard for 2 seconds, but now he's a reporter at the Daily Planet. Then I kind of get it.
He's literally
know?
Worked at the Daily Planet.
He's in the same set. He's in the same office because they just keep reusing that
just
damn
get
office.
This for this door. Just keep, man.
We have a hallway and a piece of a stairwell and this office.
And the side room that Chloe always pulls Clark into to talk
and
about
the side
business.
Room. Yes, excuse me.
With copiers or something in there. So They talked to Brennan, and you know, I kind of like how Jimmy turns it on. He's like, "What's going on?" He's like, "I know what's going on." Blah, 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 blah. He has some confidence to him, and I like to mm-hmm. see that. So that was shocking to me. Maybe his dream.
He has a concussion,
him...
is what he has. But yeah,
who doesn't on this show, right? But anyway, his explanation was, well, he got trapped in the building, and they locked it down, and if Jimmy saw his phone, and they would think he was a suspect, and he wasn't, and you know, right. he didn't get to meet Lana, and she was here to give him a scoop, and all this.
And he heard this gunshot, and he went to go see, but by the time he got there, she was dead, and blah, yeah.
And he's about to tell him what it's all about, right? And then he gets mm-hmm. shot through the door by a shadow we see pass by, right? So still yeah. sticking with that film noirish look, and his name was...
yeah, know? And the door shatters, in the glass door, yeah. you know, like,
that's
I thought that was effective.
To shoot someone, to have a kill shot through an opaque door, I mean, that's a pretty
through
good
a
assassin.
Smoke glass door, you're right.
Dead shots on the case, apparently, yeah. but... Anyway, Jimmy runs after him, says, call the police. But who does Chloe call on her Sprint phone? Clark.
Very cute. Very cute.
So Jimmy and this guy are tussling. They're fighting. Chloe jumps into the action. She gets knocked mm-hmm. over. They're apparently on like the 50th floor.
80,000th floor. Yeah.
But this is a great little moment, right? Because she's falling yeah. and Clark shows up just in the nick of time, catches her.
At the bottom of the stairwell CG shot. Like, it's a nice effort from them.
It melds together well, right? Mm-hmm. And it's a classic Superman and Lois save, you know? Mm-hmm. Right? In the Daily Planet, she's like, oh, I'll wait till the last minute. He's like, where's the fun in that, right? Little fun, little levity. I like it. And then Jimmy runs down. It's like, oh, my God, Chloe, you're fine. How are you not?
She's on the couch. Yeah. She's very cute. Yeah.
It's just very, a Spectre or James Bond falls on that couch after the
feeling
collapses.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Right? It's like, how are you okay? He starts asking questions as any normal person would. And then she just kisses him. And it's like, okay, I guess it's fine.
I thought that was a nice cover for the Superman-ness. Because as he's coming down the stairs, I'm like, oh, someone's going to have to wash out. Oh, they've already dealt with it. Right. Okay. It's just plausible enough. And he, of course, wants her to be okay. So... he's going to buy it in that moment. You know, the adrenaline's running.
And Clark's over there, gives him the nod. You know, like, all right.
Yeah.
Happy to be service.
A thank you. It's cute.
It's very cute. And then, finally, we get Lois into some journalism intrigue. Classic Lois Lane stuff now, because she shows up, and Lionel Luther is there, and he says, busy day, Miss Lane?
With right? a goon, too, by the way. That felt more threatening to me. I don't know why.
I love the fact George is the goon. He is a recurring Luther security guy.
He a goon? Okay.
He plays Victor on season 5 of Arrow in the flashbacks. So this guy, a well-traveled CW face. I love the fact, usually these people, like Lionel Lex shows up in your room, they're by themselves. I love that he brought this guy just to turn on the lamp.
Yeah.
Like, that's amazing.
That's your job, and you're going to empty out her purse because I don't want to touch it.
And so George, and he's up front, he calls him George because we know his name. It's so, I don't know, I like the look. Again, why do the Luther security people and the Smallville doctors have the most continuity on right. this show? So,
but it helps this itty bitty world building that we do. You
That's
know, like
right.
I love this type of stuff.
But Lionel pulls out the cigarette case and he says, Lillian loved this, right? So,
wait, which made me go, like, how did Lillian die? Like, did she smoke? Like,
yeah, is that where her cancer came from? Like, exactly. maybe they're trying to explain like, that, I guess.
This
right?
is weird. Yeah,
this is weird. But there's a USB in there, right?
Yes.
And Lionel plugs in and Lois is like, oh, there was nothing on there. Well, you know, of course, you know, she's seen it.
None of that. Yeah.
And he plugs in. It's Lex and the senator talking about Project Ares, right? And Lana, uh-huh. of course, had captured this footage and was going to, you know, as we find out, was going to give it to the press instead of Lionel. And Lionel, this is news to him, right? So again, Lex and Lionel are not on the same page. Shocking, right?
And Lois is giving him a little crap for that. Of like, oh, so you mm-hmm. didn't know that Lex was working with the senator? From mm-hmm.
And he's like, Miss Lane, I'd watch out because whoever was wanting to take care of this was willing to kill the wife of a Luther. What do they think they're going to do to you, right? So.
Good threat stuff. I also like that he just, like, uses her computer. Like, there's a, you know, he's just trampling all around this woman's apartment, him and George.
I guess he assumed that she'd seen it already, so, like, whatever. You know, he's like, I'm not going to wait till I get in my car. I'm going to launch this now.
I guess right? that must be what it is.
Right.
Because I thought it was a little irresponsible of him to be like, this could have all the secrets in the world. Anyway, Lois, get closer.
That's right. This is all the secrets of the traveler on that USB.
Right, exactly.
But hey, it took us a while, Matt. It took us a while, but hospital visit plus one.
Woo!
Lana is there in the hospital. Chloe comes to visit. And Lana's like trying to be all like evasive, like, oh, I really don't remember much. I'm like, yeah, whatever, Lana. Right. And Chloe's like, well, let me get you up to speed. And so they pretty much kind of confront each other about what's going on here. And we find out Lionel has Lana spying on Lex, right? right. because they needed somebody on the inside, right? And that's, you know, and then Chloe realizes, oh my God, that's why you married Lex, because Lionel flies it over you. And she's like, I did it to protect Clark. And she's like, well, he'll be fine. And he's like, what about his weakness? So, but we, finally, we're, I guess, everyone's getting up to speed now is basically the point of this scene, I guess. So.
Seemingly, yes. And I assume because we have to get everybody on the same page before we go into the series finale, or the season finale. Here.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
You know, what's funny is you know, Fly Hard was before like the two-part, I call it two-part season finale.
Yeah,
as well as the Clark season one. And this is not a two-part season finale here per se either, but it's two connected episodes. That's
it's
a small
more
start
or less,
to do more
yeah.
of that. Yeah. Interesting. But yeah, she's like,
even the colors get tired at the end of the season.
Like,
you know?
Running out of color for the film.
Yeah.
But Lana's like, you can't tell Clark this. And Chloe's like, no, he needs to know. He's like, no, we can't tell him. Like, look, you should tell him because he has superpowers. And I'm sure he can. You know how often he's around kryptonite? You know,
right.
Like, can we call Oliver Queen about this? Kryptonite won't kill him. He's doing a web comics, motion comics for Verizon or something this season. We'll get to those.
Oh, is that what? He, yeah. Oh, God, yeah.
Don't okay. forget the Oliver Queen Chronicles. anyway. But,
terribly animated things.
I know, right? We leave it there where they're both still like playing this. I know about Clark and I know, but I don't know what you
right.
know and we can't, blah, blah, blah. Lies and secrets all around. And Clark is rightfully pissed. Chloe's like, just let it go, Clark. I'm like, what are you talking about? So, anyway.
Yeah. I loved this, A, for the, you know, this is just the world of Smallville where everybody's lying to everybody. But Chloe thinks she's doing the right thing, trying to get him to bury it. A wonderful touch in this scene. Like Clark grabs her and he's just like, why aren't you more concerned about this? You know, Lana's whatever. And like, sure, Lana's first, ouch. You know,
right.
like you can tell he got a little too, he could, yeah, world
carried
of
away.
Cardboard a little bit. Yeah, he got carried away. He got upset. No, I thought this was a nice scene. It's just so sad to me that none of these characters get to talk to each other like normal people and be honest, you know?
You know, she does tell Clark that, you know, people do things that you don't expect or understand. It's great lines from Allison Mack in retrospect,
mm-hmm.
but we move on.
Oh.
I never bring that up, but even I couldn't.
I know. I'm so glad you did when I'm here, though.
Even I couldn't have ignored that. But through this dialogue, Lex realizes that Lionel is the one manipulating Lana. Lex wouldn't do that. I mean, Lex wouldn't, as twisted and evil as he is, he's not going to try and kill Lana, right? So
right.
the implication here is that Lionel sent someone to kill Lana to get that information.
I guess so.
But he's all chummy with Martian Manhunter in a couple episodes, so we'll see how this develops, my friend. No, what?
Wow,
you know what?
That's dark.
Good on Lana for putting him in a bear trap in season 7. I forgot how that...
100%.
I was giving her, you know, crap for that, but you know what? I'm Team Lana on that situation, right? So, I just...
Wow, yeah.
I remember him in a bear trap. I don't remember what led us to that moment. he's at the dam, and they pull him off, and then John Glover went into play, and we find out... Four
right,
episodes
right,
later,
right.
He's getting all what's the Kathy Bates
this...
movie with James Caan?
He's getting miseried.
Yeah,
yes.
He's getting miseried. Anyway, oh boy. But Lex, another Luther security, Bartlett. Bartlett has been like in
Bartlett.
The string of episodes, right? And he talks to Lex. Well, Lex goes to check on Lana, you know, the hospital and stuff. And then Bartlett's there and they're talking, and he's like, "Your gun was the one Lana had on her, right? It's the MacArthur gun, right?" So
yes,
good
very
on
nice
show.
Continuity.
And Lex is like, Lana wouldn't carry a gun. I'm like, oh man, you don't want to. You don't know Lana.
How
like
little
me,
you know your wife. Yeah, just wait, dude. I did like the other detail here of just like is that going to be a problem? Like, no, it wasn't registered, but I checked the ballistics. I'm like, of course you. This pearlescent, beautiful gun isn't registered because you're a criminal now. You.
Oh man, but you know it's the Jimmy Olsen episode, Matt. So we have to bookend it,
right?
With a great Jimmy
like
Chloe scene.
Throwing him off the show, yeah.
It's so weird. So they're in the back alley of the Talon where something actually good happens for a change, right?
Yeah, it's a nice moment, yeah.
She calls him, you know, Sam Spade, right? Her personal hero, right? He made the front page of the Daily Planet, so that's cute, right?
Mm-hmm.
He's like, yeah, my dream. You know, half of it made sense.
Doesn't matter.
Nothing
None
makes sense, Jimmy. But the
yeah.
funny thing is, the things he say don't make sense. He's like, Lana working with Lionel Luther and Clark having a secret identity, saving people and night and being reported by day. That's crazy.
Cute
crazy,
stuff.
I tell you.
She gets to do the raised eyebrow that nobody sees. Yeah. You know, like, I enjoy that.
I gotta love the technology where he gives her a playlist by giving her a physical iPod.
Hands her an iPod, plugs it into the car.
Is that
and
how
it's playing
is that a
the
playlist
song that
worked?
Lois was singing?
Yeah, the song that Lois was singing, which is
Somebody Else.
Somebody Else. Yeah, yes. Which somehow he got that recording of Erica Durance from his dream onto that iPod. But that was, you know, if they made another small little mix, that definitely should have been on there. But
I would hope so. Now this isn't. I don't remember the song very well, and I couldn't find any real information on it. Like someone recorded it, but it didn't seem like it was an old timey song. I don't know. This did remind me, though, of, yes, Lois singing, but that song in particular, Harley Quinn singing Say That We're Sweethearts Again in an animated series episode. Do you remember this? Like, that is the best version of someone singing an old-timey song that, like, fits, that
that's
fits the show.
After her and Joker have broken up at some point? Or
yes, yeah. Okay. She's working with Batman to stop Joker's plan, and
don't
then they get together
anything.
Again at the end. Yes, exactly. Yeah, wonderful man. Episode. But that's an old like MGM song that they got to use in that episode, and I kind of feel like that's what's happening here. I have to assume.
Yeah, perhaps. But wow, it was really rough. Nowadays, you can just send somebody a Spotify link, but back in the old days, you had to literally give someone an iPod.
No, I think you still made a mix CD. Like, they're just making it too high tech.
Yeah, I mean, I was making Smallville song mix CDs all throughout my time watching 100%. The show back in the day. So anyway.
If you'd like the track list of the Hero mix that I listened to for all my life, I'll put it online.
Well, you know what? This very season, Lois gave Clark a mix CD for Whitesnake. So.
Exactly. But she was under a spell. She forgot about technology. Yeah.
I mean, that's not... It's like if it said Sprint on it, it would have been another product placement. It was the way they focus on it, plugging it in. I mean, we all had to do that back in the day. We had older cars. Right. Like you use the, some of us still do, right? Not going to judge, right? If my car hadn't been flooded in a hurricane, I would still have a car like that as well, plugging it in the 1/8 cord. Right?
I had the tape deck that had a cord like sticking out, or it was like a little tape, but it wasn't a tape, and you put it in the tape deck, and then you could play your iPod through that.
Fascinating technology, right? I mean, that's to me, that's even more impressive. They could make that old technology work. Like
me too. I loved it.
I miss Matt. Do you miss going to a record store and putting it, a record? Listen to me. I want a record store, mate. Just going to somewhere, a music store, getting a CD and like putting it in your car. Like, yeah, driving on the way home.
On the
now
way
it's
home.
Like, oh look, I just clicked and downloaded my album on my. You know, there's something about that.
I was
that.
In traffic the other day and bought an album. You know, like, yeah, I anyway. Which is a wonderful convenience, but I understand what you're saying.
But yeah, you know, he's giving her a playlist because he's going off to shoot some polar bear swim club. He's on assignment.
Yes.
So,
but she thought it was going to be the gun running ring and wherever the hell, Quadro Maltese or whatever she said. But I do love that he's got this high tech music that he gives her. But then the phone is a digital, or excuse me, the camera is a digital camera that he just puts on the hood of the car to take a picture.
Jimmy, you are a photographer. I saw you use a better camera in this episode. If you're going to have some nice goodbye photo of you and your girlfriend, you're not going to put it on whatever, like, 4 pixel.
I guess it doesn't have a timer. Yeah, I know.
Come on, those cameras have timers. But anyway, they to kind of bookend things, because he's going to go off and maybe he'll be back in a couple episodes. We'll see. I forget how he even shows back up in season 7. I guess when Chloe dies, he shows up in the hospital, I think.
Tell
spoilers.
Me. Yeah. I will find out with you in a couple months when you get to that episode.
We are really getting into my hazy waters as far as Smallville encyclopedic knowledge here. But anyway, there's like a freeze frame in them. It goes black and white because remember when we did that for half the episode?
Right. He kisses the girl and dips her, you know, like they do the pose or whatever.
But. And then it swipes out because the 40s.
Because 40s.
There's my hero.
Just my luck. Finally get a photo on page one. I'm in front of the camera, not behind it.
Oh, come on. Even I was impressed with the Sam Spade quick thinking. You can't tell me all that just came from a bonk on the noggin.
You know, it was so weird. Half of it made sense, but Lana and Lionel working together and Clark Kent leading a double life as a reporter by day and crime fighter by night. You know, it's funny what your mind will cook up.
Noir got a 7.5 out of 10 on IMDb, and Neil Bailey from the Superman homepage gave it a 3 out of 5. And this was his explanation.
Wow.
I wanted to give some context for that score because Neil has been pretty rough on the show this season. He said, quote, "I don't like funny episodes of Smallville. I've now seen 2 seasons of Buffy, a benchmark, people used to say. Quote, it works well for this kind of show. Well, funny works well for Buffy for a reason. It's never taken itself wholly seriously, at least what I've seen. It's always camp with a purpose. Smallville is, or was, a serious drama. So a complete jump into the funny always plays as ridiculous, like the vampire episode, or the witch episode, etc. Funny is odd on this show. Here, however, I think for the first time with me, the funny works. In the concept of the dream sequence. Still, the plotting surrounding it is miserable. Mm. I'm going to say 5 for novelty, 1 for execution of plot, and fairly meet at a 3 rating. And to kind of respond to that slightly, I do understand what he's saying, because I think this kind of thing works better on Lois and Clark, as it did. It just fits that show better, regardless of execution or not. It just feels kind of out of place. Like, they never did a musical episode on Smallville for the same kind of reason. So.
Right. I get it. It's just something about calling Smallville like a serious
drama.
Kind of threw me. Yeah.
That's where he gets hung up on the season 6.
I'm like, no, it's a sci-fi.
There's wrestlers
it's a
in my serious
show.
Drama.
At so, this point. Anyway, yeah. Interesting. I also think he doesn't quite understand Buffy either, but okay.
Fair enough. But Matt, on the letter grade scale, what would you give Noir?
I guess a solid C. I almost want to go lower, but I don't want to be that negative about it. But like plot wise, it's nothing. And anything that of interest that does happen with like the Lex Lana, like Luther of it all, doesn't actually happen in this episode. But aesthetically, there was some cute thing. All right, C minus.
All right. Well, I also am giving it a C minus. So.
Hey, all right.
We are in alignment there, because I'm like, well, this is below average. And you know, for these, like a C average, like I guess in school, but whatever, right? Like I think an average episode of Smallville, I would probably say is like a B minus, right? So if you really do the math and break it down. So yeah, there was just nothing going on here. And it felt like a fruitless exercise of like, yeah, it's cool. You replicated some 40s stuff, but why? Like make it mean something, make it say something, make it play into the plot.
Yeah.
He remembered Gardenia. Like, I mean, he could have done that not having a dream for half the episode in black and white, where all the characters were themselves, but also not themselves. And you got to really establish that stuff. So
it made me think too, while you're talking here, of like what you were saying with Flyhard, where like you're 15 minutes in and it's just like, nobody said say yet. But like if they had kind of set up it's almost like a dream sequence-y movie. Like if they had set up stuff that like clues for him to key in on that weren't just this cigarette case, that had been character stuff, and it was kind of him working it out in his head, and that's what we were seeing, and he comes through and like that stuff makes sense, like then maybe it would have had a little more weight to it. But as it stands, it was just he noticed a prop, you know,
like lean into the dream nature of the thing instead of like the 40s, like with no mystical elements, no his subconscious working through something. Like that's what you do with these kinds of episodes, right?
It would have been nice to meet some suspects and red herrings early on.
Nothing.
Too.
No one.
You know, like have met that reporter and maybe somebody else that, you know,
yeah.
To
make,
throw them
make
off.
It a real, like, do it, you know?
Yeah.
I don't know. So, yeah.
Give him the clues before the dream so that the dream is him putting it together.
Well, we saw the cigarette case on the floor. So that's
plural.
So C minus is all around. Let's all go to the tally board. We have a +1 for blue shirt, red jacket. That brings us to 57. Yay. We have a +1 for hospital visit. That brings us to 104. I mean, the last several have been Lana herself, right, this season. We have a +1 for main character death because we see Lex Luthor on screen get shot and die and announce to the world that he's dead. So we're counting it.
Okay.
That brings us to 13. And then we have a +1 for product placement, Pete, for all the Sprint phones we see all around the place. That brings us to 18 so far.
And we get a Lana tried to kills.
Lana tried to. Okay,
dream
yeah.
Lana tried to kills.
If not for that Gardena cigarette case, Jimmy would have been.
I mean, I could have had it.
Could have had it. So
if
close,
we're counting
Matt.
Dream stuff, you know.
Now Bechdel test fail because Martha's not here. Lois doesn't talk to Martha or Chloe or Lana, obviously. And then Chloe and Lana just talk about Clark. So that's a fail there. So there you have it. Matt, very much fun talking to you about
it. Was. I'm sorry we weren't more excited about it.
I mean, do people love this episode? I don't know.
I have no idea.
All right, Matt. Well, thank you for joining me on this very Lois and Clark-esque episode, but I think that does not do Lois and Clark credit, because when they did this, they did it right, let me tell you.
They did it right.
If you want to hear you talking about how Lois and Clark did do it, where can they find you at out there?
Lois and Clark, the new podcast of Superman. That's Clarked with an apostrophe D. Back at it, basically stealing Zach's formula now. I'm a one-man show, but have some great guests coming. Zach, we had a wonderful episode this season. Miss Lauren Wynn joins me. Lance Laster and Cavante Chillis join me. And Mr. Craig Byrne will be joining me as well. So please come check us out over there and follow me on all the social things. Oh, and on the Gotham Clock Tower level, of course, too. We're still doing Always Hold On to the Flash, which for some reason we're about to record an episode of. So busy night for us.
What have I done?
Yeah.
So, yes, lots of fun running through the streets of Central City over there.
Oh, it's been great.
And as for me, you can find me personally on Twitter at MoronZach. That's MoreonZach. I'm also the host of another podcast, Franchise Fatigue. You can hear us at the UFP, United Federation of Podcasts, talking about movies, remakes, reboots, and when franchises get fatigued. Find us on Twitter at Franchise Fatigue. And then finally, for the podcast year, you can find us on Twitter at Always Smallville with one S. You can find us on Facebook at Always Hold On to Smallville. And you can send us an email at alwaysmallville@gmail.com, once again with one S. We'll be back next week talking about Prototype. But until then, always hold on to Smallville.
I want somebody else, somebody who could be someone not like yourself, but somebody who loves me. 'Cause I need somebody else, somebody who loves me, somebody who
Always Hold On to Smallville is brought to you by listeners like you. Chris Fuchs, Cavante Chillis, Dallas Hernandez, Casey Cochran, Darren Kirsch, Joey Deanberg, JJ Hodges, DJ DeWinna, Jason Skipper, Nathan Rothacher, Mateo Jarrell Santiago, Nathan McKenzie, Tim Miller, Joe Mikindo, Steve Rogers, Molly Ficarella, Atif Sheik, John Curcio, Mike Franz, Dylan D'Antonio, Mariana Sachi, Andrew Parker, James Lee, Jonathan England, Adam Sullins, Joe Michael, Mark Idzfoppen, Alex Ramsey, Jason Davis, Patrick Bravo, Corey Moore, James Bandini II, Nick Ryan Magnoza, Eddie Bissell, Jim Thomas, Nicholas Fansler, Catherine Caldwell, Will Hunt, Clint Kent, T. Hamill, Helena Gibbs, Patricia Carrillo, Omar, Tom Gerke, Nicholas Coso, Erica Flynn, Jared Gibbs, Anthony Anderson, Jasmine McGilly, Keith Falls, Jay Packett, Cody Thomas, Lauren D., and Alvin Norland. Thank you so much to all these patrons. And you too can become a patron by going to patreon.com/alwaysmallville with one S. Hope to see you there.